Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode. It's time for our Friday Newscap segment. Our guests this morning are attorney and former Corporation Commission Chair Chris Mays and John McDonald, partner at Policy AZ. Guys, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, Chris, yesterday on this show, Mark and I spoke with Mayor Greg Stanton, who we know has decided to run for Congress, and now there's the dominoes have started, all these council members deciding to run for mayor. What are some thoughts that come to mind for you? Because we were actually discussing, is that going to cause disorganization in the city? What's going to happen with all these changes?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, it is definitely going to be a dominoes falling situation and a ton of change at the city, also in Congress. It's hard to tell. You obviously have Stanton leaving. You're going to have changes on the council itself with Gallego running and Valenzuela. And so then you've got an appointment situation where the ton of people are going to be appointed into those positions. We don't know exactly when the elections are going to be held because it depends on when Stanton resigns. So there's going to be a ton of change. I think the thing for me really is to watch how that mayoral race goes. That's going to be a real battle. And then obviously, who comes in to replace those two will shake up the council and the makeup as well.
John, how much bigger would you expect the field of candidates for Phoenix mayor to get? I mean, do you think it's just these two, or do you think there are more who are going to jump in at some point?
Oh, I think we're definitely going to see more people. I mean, Councilman Nowakowski, I know, is considering running as well. So you could actually have three council members, all Democrats, running, which would be a very competitive race. I mean, they're all very capable and could certainly any one of those could come out on top, which I think is a good thing for Phoenix voters to have that sort of capability in the race. But you haven't seen any Republicans announce, and I would think that there are a number of Republicans out there seeing this as a very winnable race in this particular election cycle. So I think it's going to be a very crowded field.
Yeah, and you would have to think that somebody would jump in from the Republican side who might come out of that sort of north central part of the city, right, John, where you have a little bit more of a Republican base.
Yeah, that's right. I think you've got a pretty strong Republican contingent in Phoenix, which has always been, of course, been a Democratic stronghold in the state along with Tucson. But things are changing. The demographics are changing. And I think you're going to see somebody from, yes, maybe that north central area come in and see that as a winnable race.
Does it become more winnable the more Democrats are in the race? I mean, if you have, for example, Michael Nowakowski and Kate Gallego and Daniel Valenzuela, do they potentially split that vote and maybe let somebody with, vastly different views? Because those three have some differences, but in general, they're all basically on the same page on things. Does that allow maybe somebody else to sort of slip in and take a plurality?
I think it could. And of course, people have to remember that the City of Phoenix election is a nonpartisan race, so the mathematics in this is a lot different than a race with a primary and a general election. So, yeah, I think that's a very good point. And if the Republicans were smart, they would try to coalesce around one candidate and get that candidate in there as somebody who could end up on the right side of that math.
Now, we guess that candidate's not going to be Sal DiCicco, but I was thinking back when Greg Stanton won and wasn't able to get the 50+1 because there were six candidates at that point. Chris, it was Wes Gullet, who
right.
We all know very well as a consultant, but Wes isn't a natural candidate in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not asking for any names, but do you think we could get a surprise person like that who isn't one of the sort of recycled kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you could see somebody like Wes come in. I was thinking on the way over here, maybe a sitting legislator from that area, mm-hmm. somebody from the Arcadia area, a business person from the Arcadia area who might come in, who's maybe in DiCicco's district, but we haven't heard about. So I absolutely think that's a possibility. I mean, I agree with John. If I were that person, I'd be looking at it because while you have all of this excitement, obviously, on the Democratic side, all of this progressive movement, you saw that in the last, in DiCicco's race when he faced such a stiff challenge, is going to be split a little bit. And you're going to have Valenzuela with a lot of grassroots Latino support. You're going to have Gallego with her base. And I don't know where the progressives go in that scenario, honestly.
What kind of time frame do you think we might be looking at? When we spoke with Mayor Stanton yesterday, obviously he has until May to announce that he's resigning. That's when the deadline is. He said it could be sooner than that, but that's the deadline. Do you have a sense of what kind of timeline we're looking at as far as when we might know who else is going to get into this field?
It's hard to predict exactly when a Republican or Republicans will get into the field, but I certainly think Mayor Stanton would be wise to exit sooner rather than later. His field is not going to just be laid there for him to win easily. There's going to be, in a swing district like that, probably a number of Republicans who jump into that race, and perhaps a Democrat or two, though I think the fact he's got such name ID and is a natural fit for that district probably keeps a number of Democrats away. All of that, I think, adds up to his departure coming long before May, because there's just no way I think he could run an effective campaign, raise the money he needs to, and be out in the community the way he needs to waiting that long.
That is going to be a fascinating race to watch. I think that's probably, aside from the entire cinema flake situation, that is going to be the most interesting primary to watch, actually, on the Republican side, because I think you're going to see a ton of people jump in there. You could see people, you know, the sort of the usuals like Wendy Rogers and Marty Sepulveda and, you know, those folks, you know, who knows, Vernon Parker, maybe those guys who've run before might jump in. But then, you know, maybe somebody like Jay Hyler, who's already floated his name for Senate, might jump in there. Or, you know, somebody, well, Paul Hickman from the Banking Association, who's a former McCain guy. I think all these people are just looking at it. Some of them are salivating over it. So you're going to get a ton of interest on the Republican side. And they're going to be competitive because that's, let's remember, that is a true swing district. And it's going to be winnable for both sides.
And John, another thing that we discussed with Mayor Stanton was the idea that he had been talked about as someone who might be a Secretary of State candidate. And of course, we had to make the joke that that's the best way for Democrats to become governor in this state is for the governor to leave and the Secretary of State to go in. And he talked about how there had been changes in the law. So in terms of the money he was using, it was easier for him to go ahead and run for Congress instead. But do you think that in any way affects Democrats statewide? Because there has been, though people would argue that the last slate of Democratic candidates was a pretty good slate, couldn't get over the hump. Is Stanton a guy that would have gotten Democrats statewide excited? And does that make it, frankly, even less likely Democrats are going to get one of those other jobs back?
Well, I think if you're the Democratic Party, if you had the mayor of Phoenix, longtime mayor of Phoenix, running for anything, that's certainly a formidable candidate. The danger of that, and we've seen it many, many times, is that people assume that the mayor of Phoenix is just going to be broadly accepted by the larger state, and history shows that's just not the case. So I actually think Mayor Stanton is very wise to avoid that trap that a lot of Phoenix mayors fall into and say, well, I can just take this to the next statewide level. It hasn't worked in the past, no matter how popular that mayor was. Terry Goddard would be a great example of that in his earlier runs. So I think Mayor Stanton, that's why I think he's a natural fit for this district. It is dominated mostly by Phoenix. It is a slightly Democratic district. He's a pragmatic, relatively centrist mayor. He's a good fit. I think he's wise to avoid that trap.
Yeah, and I think also, to your point, Steve, if he had run for Secretary of State or some other office, statewide office, he would face what a lot of Democrats are going to face, which is it's just an uphill climb still right now, demographically, politically. The numbers are against you if you're a Democrat running for statewide office. We saw that in 2016 with nobody winning. And then you add to that the fact that you have all these dark money groups, most of which are on the Republican side, who are willing to come in and spend against a Democrat, including APS. I certainly hope they don't do it again, but we'll see. And the Koch brothers, all of whom are willing to put in money on these statewide races for some reason. And so it makes it really tough right now. So maybe 2-4 years from now, it won't be so tough.
Is that dark money situation more of an issue running statewide? Like, for example, would Stanton have more of a problem with that if he were running for a statewide office than running for Congress?
Absolutely. I absolutely think so. I think it's less. I think it's running for Congress, you can raise more hard dollars if you're a Democrat. You can compete more effectively. He'll probably have some national support, probably because it's a swing district. So, Mark, yeah, I think that's probably true. When you're a Democrat running for statewide office, you're pretty well exposed.
Now, I would slightly disagree with that. I think that what we've seen in the past few years is the dark money really starting to filter down even to legislative races in individual districts. So I think Chris is right that a congressional race tends to raise more hard dollars, meaning the traditional dollars. But I think the dark money has become so pervasive that it's down to city council races. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see dark money come into play in the mayoral and city council races in Phoenix.
That's true.
Now, Chris, I don't want to put you on the spot, but you were obviously with the Corporation Commission, which is a statewide office, and you were very successful in doing that. You also considered congressional run, did you not?
Yeah, briefly.
Well, yes. Yeah. I mean, but were any of these things a factor for you? I mean, you're a Republican, so it's a little bit different. But I was wondering in terms of, because especially even thinking about the primaries, you mentioned in Congressional District 9, the battle, primaries, we're so used to seeing Republican side more conservative and Democratic side more liberal. And yet in that swing sort of district, wouldn't that be tough for a real conservative Republican to win?
Not if they had dark money supporting them. I mean, yeah, I did consider it. And I think for me, ultimately, I decided not to do it back in the 2000s because I decided that the Corporation Commission was the best place for me and I wanted to serve out my term. But the raising money and what it takes to raise money is a daunting thing. And so I think all of these candidates have to understand that if they're going to go into this life, it's going to be all about raising money for the rest of their careers. And so that was something that I had to consider. But, you know, certainly I think that, a Democratic candidate running for Congress can be competitive, but I agree with John, there's likely to be dark money involved.
John, when a candidate is deciding what kind of race they want to run, what role does money specifically and the amount of money they have to raise and maybe the amount of dark money that will be used to help them or hurt them? I mean, where does that fall sort of in the calculus for candidates?
Well, that depends on how much the candidate wants to win.
Let's assume most candidates would like to win.
Well, I distinguish those candidates from those who are running for vanity or for whatever sort of Don Quixote reason might be out there. Money's not so much of a factor to them because they know they can't raise it. They're going to run anyway, and they're going to lose. If you want to win, money is the absolute main focus of any candidacy, unfortunately. Candidates are raising money 24 hours a day nowadays with the ability to do it through the internet. So it is unfortunate that that's what our society has come down to, that if you can't raise that money, there are exceptions, but if you can't raise that money, you simply cannot get your message out in a way that is competitive.
It's the Friday Newscap on KJZZ. That's John McDonald. Also here is Chris Mays, and the conversation will continue here on 91.5 in just a moment. Good morning. It's the show on 91.5 KJZZ in Phoenix with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. It is our Friday Newscap segment. Our guests this morning are former Corporation Commission Chair Chris Mays and John McDonald, partner at Policy AZ. Now, John, this week had the official closure. It had been in the works with Sheriff Paul Penzone to close the Tent City Jail, which was part of the legacy of Sheriff Joe Arpaio. And as that legacy went on longer and longer, more and more people decided maybe this wasn't the right way to go. What's your take on the significance of Tent City and then Tent City's closure?
Well, my take on Tent City is a personal one because I had a brother, my older brother, who is now deceased, was a guest of Sheriff Joe and other facilities in the state in his life. He earned his way there. At times in his life, he deserved to be there. But he was a human being and a person who was loved by his siblings and his family and his parents, and he had a story. He was a person, and that's the case for everybody there, regardless of how they got there. So from my standpoint, what I saw and what I experienced personally was a dehumanization. That's Sheriff Joe's legacy when it comes to Tent City. In order for his rhetoric to work, you have to dehumanize those people. You have to turn them into props for your own political benefit. That's his legacy. My brother was not a prop. He was not a pawn. He was a human being, and a lot of people went through that system and were treated in that way. So that's the legacy. If I could sit in the cab of that heavy equipment that bulldozed that place, I would do it today and hope that it never comes back.
Yeah, and I think that's such an eloquent stating of the situation. And I most people didn't see that. Most of us saw the sort of PR side of this, which was an extraordinary thing. The thousands of interviews that the sheriff did from that facility, the 4 or 5 presidential candidates that went through there and toured that place, despite all of these lurking problems and issues. And it was really striking to me to see how quietly this thing was shut down. And after all of that attention seeking by the sheriff and all of that international fame that it got, basically they took the tents down, they took the steel and melted it, and it was gone. It is gone. And it was just such a stark thing to go from what it was to what it is now, which is nothing, thankfully.
And no crowds out there marching, right, saying we have to keep it.
We have to keep
it. No people rising up saying this is an important part of our society.
Right.
Nobody said anything. It was all fraudulent. It was all designed to prop up a politician. That's the reality of it. The fact that nobody objected when it was torn down tells you everything you need to know.
John, do you think that the way that it went away and will be turned into something else, as Chris said, it was kind of a quiet thing. There wasn't, weren't huge events. Was that the appropriate way to handle it, do you think?
I think from Sheriff Pinzone's vantage point, yes. I think his take was, let's move on. And I think that's correct. There's a lot to be talked about and discussed when it comes to that legacy. But the fact is, there's work to do. And I think turning it into a political event would defeat his purpose of moving on.
Yeah, and ultimately, I mean, the taxpayers will be the ones who benefit. $4.5 million will be saved every year by the taxpayers of Maricopa County, which is pretty extraordinary when you think about it, in addition to obviously the prisoners who don't have to go through that anymore. But ultimately, it was a terrible waste of money, and to John's point, obviously not a humane situation. So it's...
And finally, on this one, to paint with a broad brush, should we look with less respect at elected officials or others who could have stood up to the sheriff on some of these things, but were more interested in his endorsement? Especially if we look at if there's actually factual that this does not deter crime, it doesn't really do anything except do what John you're saying, dehumanizing. Should we be disappointed even more in the people who didn't stand up to him over the years?
Yes. You had a pattern of abuse, you had a pattern of dehumanization, and you had a pattern, if you are a conservative Republican who is concerned with the fiscal health of your county, you had a legacy, a history of financial mismanagement and an enormous waste of money. So the fact that there weren't more people standing up and saying this is wrong on multiple levels is disappointing. Unfortunately, that's politics. We didn't create this. It's been going on for as long as we've been a country. Politicians, unfortunately, sometimes tend to look to their own self-interest first. That's the nature of a democracy and elected officials. But sure, that disappointment is widespread.
And it highlights the courage of those who did. Many of those who did stand up to Arpaio sometimes wound up being harassed, or Andy Thomas. And so those folks deserve a lot of credit. There were a few folks who did stand up to him.
Mark, you want to move on to some of the congressional fundraising, which was kind of interesting this week?
Yeah, so the deadline coming up for candidates to file their third quarter FEC, Federal Election Commission, filings. What are you guys going to be looking for as far as who's raising what, where that kind of money is coming from?
Well, I'm really interested in obviously two races, the Flake Sinema race, but also the congressional race in Tucson, the Kirkpatrick, McSally,
District 2,
Matt Hines, and I'm going to be interested to see how much money McSally and Kirkpatrick raise. Obviously, they are prolific fundraisers. That's what they do really, really well. But also, Matt Hines is down there. He's telling people, he's actually ahead in the polls, I'm told. My brother lives down there, so he gets the phone calls. But But it's going to be interesting to see who's raising the money, because you have Kirkpatrick, who's taking on a little bit of water, people saying, oh, she's a carpetbagger, but she's a great candidate, has the support of Gabby Giffords and Mark Kelly. But you have all other Democrats down there, Matt Hines, Bruce Wheeler, Mary Mattiella, who's the former assistant secretary of the Army. So it's a really competitive race, I think, on the Democratic side. And then McSally, who is raising a ton of money but really has voted in a way that does not reflect the district. She voted 97% of the time with Trump, including in favor of repealing Obamacare.
John, what are you looking for?
Well, I also think the O'Halloran race in northern Arizona is going to be very interesting. Representative O'Halloran is a Democrat who has, at times during his first term, voted with the Republicans, and which is obviously a matter of self-preservation, knowing Representative O'Halloran fairly well. That's going to be a district where he may have people coming at him from different spots on the spectrum, both left and right. So that's another race I would watch. But to your question, Mark, ironically, what I would look for in fundraising is national money.
Hmm.
I think there was a time when you would say just the opposite and say, how much is he raising or she raising from grassroots people in Arizona? Right now, I think when you start to see those national dollars come in, that tells me that people are looking at this race from afar, polling and whatever the case may be, and seeing this is the person who has the real strength and this is where we're going to put our money.
It seems like maybe that would be a better indication of where some of the national groups feel than like setting up programs with fancy names and send out press releases about promoting X number of candidates.
I think that's true, but the other thing I would say, and I'm sort of arguing against my own point, is this cycle and the advent of Donald Trump and his politics has turned everything on its head, and what everybody thinks is going to happen lately hasn't been the case. So I think we are just in a very, very unpredictable cycle.
Yeah, and I think with regard to, for instance, McSally and Flake, from a national standpoint, it's going to be interesting to see how much money they are able to raise or how much help they get from the Republican the Republican congressional committees, given the fact that now some of the super donors are saying, we're not giving you any more money because you haven't come through on repealing Obamacare and you haven't come through yet on tax cuts. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out at the end.
And we'll be talking about it week after week here on the NewsCap. Thanks very much to former Corporation Commission Chair Chris Mays and John McDonald, partner at Policy AZ, for joining us. Guys, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday NewsCap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.